You know how thoughts are a soup until you turn them into a sentence?
Sure. That's a universal experience. Hey, Zach.
Hey, Liz. So, Liz, do you remember a while ago, like in 2018, it would be, we hell of a year, huh? We read the book, Surely You're Joking, Mr. Feynman.
Yeah, I don't feel good about that book club. I feel like my memory of it is like wanting to dislike Feynman much more than I probably should have.
Please expand on that, because I was also, in light of the things I was reading today, thinking again about Richard Feynman and also have complicated feelings about the man.
I don't know, like, exactly why necessarily, just that, like, I kind of feel like we could have, mostly, I feel like I could have read it with the humor it was intended to have.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think if I would characterize him now, it would just be as like a guy who doesn't think critically about the way that mundane actions within the system can cause immeasurable harm.
Like most guys.
In a lot of ways. Right, like most guys. That's kind of a pretty guy trait. So, like, we can look back through history at him with that lens and also remember to use other lenses.
Yeah, and, like, I felt like my memory of it, and, like, this is 4 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
But my memory of it, of our conversations, was that, like, we were a bit dismissive of, like, some genuine scientific achievement.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that was indicative of the place where we both were, which was we were both less and less being a guy. And for a period after you are a thing and then you begin to define yourself as not that thing, you define yourself as anti that thing. Here's a new thought. I was talking with my boss the other day about the way that Christians conceive of atheists. And most of the atheists that, like, a Christian who's going to church and mostly has a Christian community around them is running into atheists is going to be as, like, a teen leaving the church who is now defining themselves as anti-Christian and not just as, like, whatever, you guys go do your thing. And I think it makes sense that when you have been having a pattern of behavior reinforced that was not good for you to be mad at the thing that was reinforcing that behavior. The way that atheists are going to be mad at whatever thing it is that being Christian hurt them about, or the way that we were like mad at our own guideness and at the institution of guys, I guess.
The old IOG.
And so we were defining ourselves in, like, there's a lot of elements to this. Here's one way that I'm going to choose to look at that moment in our lives is we were defining ourselves in opposition to guyness. And so the lens that we looked at Richard Feynman was that, like, geez, what a guy.
Yeah.
But, like, not a good way. A lot of times you say, what a guy, and that's, like, a good thing, but, you know.
What a guy disparaging.
Uh-huh.
What a guy, parenthesis, disparaging. Sorry, this is going to be a little bit of a tangent. How much Elden Ring content have you consumed?
Video game Donkey's review and like two or three people on TikTok mostly talking about how they lost their partners to Elden Ring.
That's funny. There's a message system, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Are you it? And if Jared, if you're not familiar, it's like at any point in the game, a player can leave a message on the ground. With like, it has to have a, like a certain format, like be wary of this or didn't expect blank ahead. And like it has a set number of word count. Don't play with the Rubik's Cube while we're recording. Don't play with the Rubik's Cube while we're recording. Don't play with the Rubik's Cube while we're recording. It has a set number of like phrases you can use and in different combinations. But like people get pretty creative about it, but still it's so but those messages can appear, have like a chance to appear in someone else's game. So you can just be walking through an area and like there's a little glowing thing on the ground and you can walk over it and see someone else's message. Maybe they attach like a gesture to it.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the option to appraise it. So you can either applaud or disparage and or do nothing. And that terminology has taken over our mine and producer Quinn's like I like this or I don't like this kind of terminology. So whenever we like instead of going like plus two or minus two anymore. Now we're going disparage. Didn't like that joke. You know what? Applaud.
Applaud.
Yeah, applaud. Applaud.
I like that. You have mentioned a lot of things to me. I was just listening back to an episode where you introduced the notion of you and your partner just going like, hey, hold on a minute, infrastructure. And I think this happens in all couples, but it's just like from an outside perspective, hearing about it every once in a while from you, the memes that you two produce are very fun.
We certainly enjoy them.
Yeah.
I like it too.
So what a guy disparagingly is where we were.
Yeah.
So producer H shared with me an article that I will now share with you in a very timely manner. And it, in the process of researching that, I decided to reanalyze Feynman a little bit and go like, what a guy, applaud and disparage. because some of the things in that book were like genuinely valuable. And the one in particular that I'm thinking about is, it's got a name, and the name is on the iPad, and once I open up the iPad, I can figure out what the name of it is. It's not going to tell me the name unless I scroll all the way to the top. The name is The 7% Solution, which is one of the stories that I really remember from that book, and it's about how Feynman was working on some sort of problem and ran into an issue. His like estimations were 7% off of the data that he collected, or like his mathematical model mismatched. It was by 9%, mismatched something else by 9%. And he was working on it and working on it and working on it and trying to like figure this out. And I think let it go for a week. And then a week later, somebody was like, hey, did you hear this? Like, very important thing was actually 7% off. And he went, hang on, 7%? That's a lot like 9%. And so we went back and using the new information determined that his estimations were only 2% off, which like felt better to him. And like that makes sense. 2% versus 9% is relatively significant.
Lots of real good words there.
I get why you would be happier with 2% than 9%.
Agreed.
And so it turns out he went back and looked at like what was going on, what caused him to make this error. And it turns out that like the first study ever published on neutron-proton coupling, just like looked at some data and made the wrong conclusion. They had a bunch of data and they took the data and they just drew totally the wrong conclusion. And for however many years, everyone was basing their models and their systems off of this incorrect conclusion that they made in this one paper. And so the point was like, go check primary sources always and validate that you agree with them. But also the point is scientists make mistakes sometimes. I know that this is not, you know, the politically correct thing to say nowadays, but scientists make mistakes sometimes.
I'll get the pitchforks, maybe. Uh-huh. You can get the torches and we'll go ahead and, you know, start the riot.
Against me?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Maybe the science, I don't know. It's hard to say, really.
Uh-huh. These days.
Someone's getting pitchforked, though.
Yeah, someone's getting rioted. So sometimes scientists make mistakes, and the interesting thing that happens with that is that then other scientists assume that scientists don't make mistakes, and they go, ah, they have, like, this got published in a journal of physics or something, and so we're going to, like, rely on that knowledge. Because if everyone just redid all knowledge from scratch every time, we wouldn't get anywhere because we'd just be redoing all of the knowledge from scratch. We'd get really good at doing the fundamentals, though. So in quantum mechanics, they use Feynman diagrams. And that's the reason that these two things converged in my brain. And then I was like, ah, this the 7% thing. I'm not a quantum physicist or have ever even like learned the tiniest amount of quantum physics. So don't listen to me and assume that anything that I'm saying is correct.
Which is something we have to say at the beginning of the show. Otherwise, actual quantum physicists can sue us for spreading misinformation.
Right.
That could be dangerous to people's lives.
Right.
You know, like financial advice and doctor.
You'll go out and make bad quantum decisions.
You might. You go.
But you see, the thing is, unless we open the box, you don't know if you've made a bad quantum decision.
Wow. Allegedly, I learned this on TikTok. Apparently, Schrodinger came up with that thought experiment as a way to say, like, so you're telling me that we can tie a macro scale event, like a cat dying, to directly to a quantum level event, and in that way we can have a macro scale superposition. And the guy, whoever else he was talking to, was like, yeah, that's what I'm saying. And Schrodinger was like, no. I don't believe you.
Yeah, no, because like the cat is at a state. If you were logging the state the cat was in the whole time, but didn't get to see the logs until the hour was up.
Well, it's not, I mean, logging it in any way would count as observing it.
Hi, welcome to my new awful observability platform, Schrodinger.
Or perhaps, so this is where, like, it starts to not make sense, is when you, like, what counts as observing it? Because, like, if a robot looks at it, right, obviously there's nothing about a person looking at it that makes it not a superposition.
Uh-huh.
It's just, like, it interacts with something outside the system. That's what makes
it.
That's what makes the wave function collapse.
Mm-hmm.
if a photon from the outside hits it, it's now, it has collapsed. It is now an event and not a superposition. But so that's why, like, if you log it, if you log the cat's state over time, even if you're not looking at the log does not exist in a superposition.
Ah, right. Okay. But if I logged it on a quantum computer?
Now listen here, bud.
This discussion has already gone over my head. I do not know what a wave function actually is. It's just a funny thing to say sometimes.
I use quantum physics for comedy.
Yeah. Speaking of which, so we've got this model of physics that is based on what we understand right now, because science is this thing that is ever evolving and ever growing and correcting as people correct it, as they are motivated to do so. But weirdly enough, we got the standard model of physics, like, pretty right, pretty a while ago. And we've just kind of been going off of the standard model for a while. And the standard model is things that you probably know about because we've been going off of it for a while. We got our, like, fundamental forces. You've got electromagnetism, gravity, weak nuclear force, strong nuclear force, the Higgs boson, that was part of the standard model, and that, like, builds up into particle physics as we know it and understand it and can rely on it pretty well until we get to the weird times. And then you also, like, there's dark energy and the universe is expanding and there's nothing that explains that in the standard model, but it also happens. So, like, maybe it's just like the standard model plus. Maybe the standard model is entirely correct and there's also this weird little layer cake that goes on top of it that explains why everything's ever expanding.
That's my favorite. And by favorite, of course, I mean least favorite thing about the standard model is that, like, we have, like, all these things and they interact just like this and it's all good. And also there's dark matter and that's just kind of a layer on top and it doesn't interact with anything ever.
Mm-hmm.
That is genuinely the current, like,
yeah.
The best guess is, like, everything interacts except for this one bit. This one bit is just its own thing and we don't need to worry about it.
Because as far as we can tell, like, everything we've observed, it all holds true. Everything, yeah, like, exists within this self-contained system without interacting with dark matter or dark energy or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So in the standard model, there are things called virtual particles. And those are... Have you ever had to work with a virtual class, Liz? Not like a class that's online, but like you're writing a Java object and it's a virtual
object. I definitely know the term, and I think I could... The short answer is no, but
it's one of those things that they made because, like, sometimes you need to do weird things with the computer, and this covers some of those cases, but most of the time you don't need to think about it. I only ever have to think about it when I'm writing stuff that goes into the ORM that translates C# code into SQL. Sometimes that needs virtual things because, like, otherwise the compiler will get too rigid about it. I don't know why that is. I just know that the compiler will yell at me if I don't. Which I like. But I love it when the compiler yells at me. Anyway, virtual particles are a similar thing. That, like, we've got particles and we get particles and they work pretty good. And then sometimes we put particles, we, like, take them apart or put them together. And then, like, for the math to work, there has to be a virtual particle, and then eventually we get back to a state where it's all just particles that all make sense, and none of them are virtual, I promise.
I imagine it's kind of like using imaginary numbers in, like, you start with all real numbers, and then you use imaginary numbers, and then you eventually solve the problem such that there are no imaginary numbers. You just use the imaginary numbers to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, like, use that in a real-life calculation.
Right. Yeah, similar thing. We start with particles, and then we've got what might as well be imaginary particles, and then we've got particles. A virtual particle you might have heard of is a photon, which is that thing that... Here's another part of... My brain is, my bean is being freaked by the, I hate that phrase, actually. Let me not say that ever. It's like very funny when Griffin McElroy says it and not allowed for anyone else. So another part of the standard model that doesn't make sense to me as a person who has never learned about it before is that there are force carriers. And these are virtual particles which carry the forces that you know and love. So like when electromagnetic force is happening, you can conceive of that as a field around the thing that the electromagnetic force is doing, whatever. You get a circuit, you get an inductor, blah, blah, blah. You passed physics too, presumably. But also, instead of being a field, it is also... photons, and the photons move, and when they move they exert that force, but also sometimes the photons are not particles and they're waves instead, and that's the whole double slit experiment, and I don't understand it well enough to relay that, but sometimes it's a particle and sometimes it's a wave because it's a virtual particle.
Right.
And
of course.
And so then all of the forces we think probably, don't quiz me on this, all of the forces probably have a virtual particle that corresponds to them. So electromagnetism, we've got photons. There's the other ones. Let me switch to the Wikipedia page that lists them all out. Strong nuclear field, strong gauge field, this says, you've got gluons, and those are the force carriers for that field. There's the Higgs field, which is a thing, it's not one of the fields that I know and love, but also there's the Higgs field, and that's the Higgs boson, or the Higgs bosons, and the Higgs field is... the field that gives everything mass.
Yeah. The way it was explained to me, probably on a Veritasium video,
mm-hmm.
was that with the Higgs field is the thing that things with mass run into. It stops them from going the speed of light constantly.
Hmm.
They're just kind of like bonking into the Higgs field. If they have mass.
Into the Higgs field. Okay. The Higgs field is the only field that is non-zero in a vacuum. Gravity is not a part of the standard model, but probably there are also gravitons, we think, maybe, which are gravitational wave particles, force carriers. Don't ask me any more questions, because I don't think anyone knows the answers.
I'm sure a lot of people have a lot of ideas. I'm not one of those people. Don't ask me the questions.
And then there's one more force that I have not yet mentioned the force carrier for, and that is weak nuclear force is carried by W and Z bosons. And weak nuclear force, I'm going to butcher this explanation. Let me see if I can find where they actually say it. If you want, like, somebody who knows what they're talking about, please go read Quanta Magazine. I've found a number of things by them that have been super helpful, including this article about the piece of news that I'm actually going to tell you once I get done giving you the background. The weak force doesn't push or pull so much as it transforms heavier particles into lighter ones. You know.
No, I don't know.
And so that's weak force. Is it transforms heavier particles into lighter ones. When radioactivity happens, it happens weak field.
This thing is radioactive is becoming lighter. There's a situation where a thing is mm-hmm. radioactive and that's mm-hmm. happening via weak nuclear force. What is being made lighter in that situation?
The radioactive thing?
Okay. So it's not so much just getting lighter, it's just kind of like losing all its stuff, right?
I don't know.
Okay. We got to get, like, someone who knows what they're talking about on this podcast.
You know, we've been going for 5 good years now without either of us knowing what we're talking about. I think we can make it another 5 before we need to bring on a physicist.
I love the idea of us just covering more and more complicated topics until, like, we can't even pretend to understand what's going on.
In a couple of years, they're no longer, like, publishing discoveries in journal articles. They're just coming onto the Worrying Bugs podcast to announce them.
And then we're, like, sitting there going, uh-huh. So what's getting lighter here? I'm not quite sure what you mean by that. No, I didn't read the reference.
I got to electromagnetism and I didn't know that one, so I figured you would just explain the rest of it to me. So there's weak nuclear force. It doesn't push or pull. It makes heavier things lighter. And when it does that, it's through a virtual particle, the W boson. And there are 2 types of W boson, and they have different charges, and I think maybe different spins, or maybe all the same spin. The links that I'm clicking are not telling me that information. But there's the W plus and the W minus, and there's also the Z. And the math works out that if the standard model is correct, you do the weak nuclear thing, and then you've got some virtual particles, the W plus and the W minus and the Z, and then you've got the end result of whatever weak nuclear force does.
Okay.
And so using that, like, the W boson is something that we can make estimations around. Before we found the Higgs boson, we estimated its mass using what we knew about the W boson. Just like, if we plug all of the numbers into this equation, here's what the Higgs boson is going to be. And then a team in somewhere, Illinois, probably. Yeah, Illinois.
It didn't say in the article. I just got, like, big Illinois vibes from it.
Sometimes you do just get big Illinois vibes. And one of those Illinois vibes is all of the W bosons moving through the universe. That's part of what gives Illinois its Illinois vibes. And so they set up and so they set up a thing to figure out the weight of W bosons, the collider detector at Fermilab. And something, something, high voltage lines, the W bosons would cross over the high voltage lines, and that allows them to figure out what the mass of a W boson is. But there are so many W bosons than hours in the day to figure out, so many more W bosons than hours in the day, that they collected a bunch of data years ago and have been sifting through that data since then.
Wow. That's a lot.
And they just sifted through the next batch of data, all encrypted. This is probably one of those things that you could tell me more about. They did all of their analysis of the data encrypted, and then at one point at the end, they decrypted it, and now they know the mass of the W boson. But they couldn't, they did not want to do all of the math decrypted because they didn't want that to cause them to make certain decisions like, oh, I think a W boson is probably going to be whatever, it's like millivolts. What is the unit that they measure it in? Please tell me. Electron volts. So that they didn't skew the data with their own biases towards a particular amount of electron volts. They did all of the math on it encrypted, and then they decrypted it.
That is probably a homomorphic encryption.
Yeah.
Which is actually a subject we've covered on Worrying Bugs before.
Uh-huh.
Very cool stuff.
Yeah. And so that's how they make sure that when they're doing science good. That's how you do double-blind physics science.
That's really cool.
Is homomorphic encryption, presumably. So they did their homomorphic encryption, and then they decrypted their results, and they were like, oh, hang on, wait a minute. Because the mass of the W boson, as they measured it, was significantly higher than what they had anticipated. Like 7 standard deviations outside of what they had anticipated, which is
that's
like
so
significantly
much
more than the margin of error that they expected for the testing equipment and then like the standard model could account for.
That's very cool. That's very cool.
And so one of two things is happening. One, all of the scientists before who have been making predictions and making analyses on the weight of the W boson have been making an error, or there's actually two types of W boson and there's they're like discovering a new W boson, whatever. Or they just messed up their data and they're incorrect here. We will know soonish. The folks at CERN are like working to figure out what the mass of a W boson is. And that's the way that science works, is you need a consensus. The thing that they found here is that maybe what we're looking at is very interesting. It is not everything we know is wrong.
It'd be pretty cool if everything we know is wrong, though.
More analysis required has been like the every article I read. They're like, by the way, more analysis required. But it would be very cool if everything we know is wrong. And also, we know everything we know is wrong because what's up with dark matter? What's up with dark energy? Is that a thing related to this W boson mismatch that we're seeing, or is that actually a layer on top of the layer cake that does not interact with the standard model things that we've been seeing?
At some point, I had a tattoo idea that was probably not a good idea. And obviously, I didn't end up getting it. I still suppose I still could. There's still plenty of time to do so.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be like the standard model like equation, or like a representation of it in some way, mm-hmm. with just like a line through it. Like, no, that's wrong. I'm so sure that's wrong that I'm going to get a tattoo of it.
Every time something like this happens, you add another line to it until it's just a black rectangle.
That'd be fun. More black rectangles on my body. I want that. That'd be number two. The one on my back is not a rectangle exactly, but it's fairly close to just a black rectangle.
Fair, yeah. So, like, maybe the Wiggles wiggle differently than we have ever anticipated. Maybe I didn't even need to pass physics 2 because everything we know is wrong. And maybe photons still work like we expected them to. And somebody years from now will have to take physics 3 mandatorily as well. And that's going to explain how dark energy ties into W bosons. And I'm not going to have to take that because I will have already graduated.
I like the idea of, okay, physics 1, that's like, you got your gravity, you got like, this is how we're going to use some calculus, and we're going to assume everything's a sphere with no air resistance, and that's going to be all good. We're going to do very large object physics. Physics 2, particle physics. And this is the standard model. These are virtual particles. This is weak force, etc. Physics 3, forget all that. That is wrong, and we're going to teach you a different thing.
My partner, H, producer H, was the one who told me about this, and they know so much more about the way that the human body works than I ever will, and I think that's incredible and a little bit frightening. But we have been very wrong about the way that the human body works in a way that is, I think, more publicly known than all of the ways that we have been wrong about physics. So their analysis on all of this information was wondering what all of the ways are that we think about physics incorrectly today, the same way that right now we're thinking about whatever, the human gut wrong. And we'll learn in the future better ways to conceive of it because we understand the ways that the systems interact much better.
Were there any conclusions so far? Or is that just like a wondering? I wonder this.
It's just a wondering. Do you mean about the body or about physics?
About physics.
I just learned about photons today. Like, I knew about photons, but also I just learned about photons are also a field. They're a particle and a wave, and also think about them like a field. Just learned about that one today, and I don't buy it. I think they're wrong.
As little as we know about physics, apparently, we can do some cool stuff with electricity. Like, wireless communication is pretty cool. You know, like using radio waves to have contact between, you know, share information across great distances. That's pretty cool. Not needing to plug in your phone to a car to get to play your podcasts at the speakers. That's also very cool. I like that a lot. And there's a new car in my life.
Ooh. The Tell Quantum, me all about her.
This is Quantum. This is Quantum Jeep 2. It is also a Jeep. And this Jeep has a radio with Bluetooth capabilities.
Something about the way that you say Bluetooth capabilities as opposed to with Bluetooth makes me scared. I can't say why that is. There's some things in the human language. Nope. Nope. That's not what it's called. There's some things in the English language.
Certus, cut that out. Certus, cut that out.
Certus, cancel me now. there's some things in the English language that can convey a sense of dread that shouldn't be able to. And for whatever reason, you saying capabilities at the end of that sentence struck fear into my heart. Hit me with it.
It's the car was made in 2011, or it was the 2011 model of this vehicle, and which makes it 11 years old, which is very much new enough to have Bluetooth capabilities. But like, it kind of seems like it was not fully thought through, and like they didn't expect a lot of people to use it. And so I would like to detail the process of connecting my phone to this car's Bluetooth, because it's hilarious to me. So the first thing you'll notice when you start pushing buttons on this radio is that there's not like a... If you push the phone button, it starts talking at you.
Ooh.
It says, well, if there's a phone connected, it starts like trying to be like 2011 car Siri. But if there's no phone connected, it says on the screen, no phone connected. And then it says voice recognition ready or something like that.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, well, that's not what I want. I want like an on-screen thing that says, let me pair my phone to the Bluetooth. So I start searching around for that. I start pushing the buttons, go into the system settings, which are mostly just whether you would like to use kilometers or miles per hour.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's not a whole lot else in there, maybe time zones.
Just so that I'm properly conceiving of this, when you interact with this system, how do you tell it something and how does it tell you something?
You can either push physical buttons or software buttons on the touchscreen, and it mostly, except for when it's doing voice recognition, just displays something on the screen to tell you something.
Okay.
And there's no scrolling, as far as I can tell. There's no, like, there's a secret menu that is just kind of hidden by the UI if you just kind of, like, swoop up. There's, like, it's not like a case of the scroll bar is hidden, so we can't access this menu, or we didn't think to access this menu.
Mm-hmm.
There's, like, my producer and I, like, really tried everything we could think of, but we just couldn't find an option to pair a Bluetooth device. But we know it could. We knew it could connect to a Bluetooth because it says when you push the phone button, no phone connected. And we were like, maybe like you're supposed to connect it via USB or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a USB port over here. Maybe we can like. Maybe that's what you're supposed to do, and there's no Bluetooth at all. So this is the point where we gave up and opened the owner's manual, which, as far as I'm concerned, that's a fail state.
Yeah, I would guess that a Jeep in 2011 had the owner's manual written before the software, so that. I don't know who to blame about that, but I agree that it's a fail state.
It's not like even I don't want to have to take directions, you know, I don't want to have to stop and ask for directions sort of thing. It's like there is a user interface and we can figure out how to do things via the user interface of this device, but pairing a phone via Bluetooth is not one of those things that we can figure out how to do. And we're not scared to push the buttons.
Mm-hmm.
Like, certain people in my life are just, like, refuse to push the buttons on their car because they don't know what they do.
That is... Being unafraid to push the buttons is an important skill when learning computers of any shape.
I would agree. So... what I'm trying to say is, like, we really tried and we could not figure out how to do it. So we opened the owner's manual, and it turns out the only way to connect your phone to the Bluetooth is via the voice commands. So you push the phone button, and then it says no phone connected, and then it says voice recognition ready, and it kind of just waits. It doesn't, like, give you options on the screen or via voice or anything to, like, say, what can I do with this? We looked in the owner's manual, and it said, once it says that, you can say phone connection or whatever, connect new phone or something like that. And then the computer voice said, did you want help? And then started listing every single option that we could possibly want from the main, like, voice command tree. And it has a little indicator of when it's listening to you and when it's not listening to you. And mm-hmm. the indicator was not on while it was listing this, like, 30 seconds long list of things you could possibly do via the voice commands. And, okay, so it turns out it's not connect a new phone, it's, like, phone setup. So, like, owner's manual is just wrong. But we got there. We said, okay, phone setup. And it said, okay, would you like to connect a new phone, delete a phone, or list connected phones? And we were like, okay, we actually just said phone setup, so not the other two, but whatever. New phone. Okay, what device would you like to connect? This is not the standard Bluetooth pairing procedure.
Uh-huh.
If you have ever connected some, like, a Bluetooth speaker, maybe, you hold a button and it goes into pairing mode, and on your phone, you say, I would like to connect to this speaker.
The thing with a robust UI.
Yeah. So this car, it sounds like this car is going to look for your phone. You say, Liz's iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, and it repeats, it doesn't, and then it plays your voice back at you, saying, Liz's iPhone, is that correct? But not in the computer voice. In my voice, it says, Liz's iPhone. So I'm like, okay. So it just wants, is that a key value pair, but the key is an audio file? Is that what's going on there? Then it's like, please enter a PIN. Please enter your PIN, or please say a 4-digit PIN. And we were like, we never set up a PIN. What are you talking about? But no, it wants you to set the PIN that you type in. It's going to, when it turns itself into pairing mode.
What?
It's going to use that PIN in the pairing. So let me say this better. When it puts itself into pairing mode and you click on it on your phone, it says, what's the PIN? Your phone says, what's the PIN? And then you type in the number you just said. But you do, it's like, but it doesn't put it all this.
Yeah.
This would all be fine if it was happening on the screen.
Right.
But it's not happening on the screen. It's happening out loud. And if you take too long, it's going to get confused. So you can't think about it. You're like, okay, what does it actually want here? It's like, 1, 2, 3, 4, you know? And it's like, you wanted 1, 2, 3, 4. And this is in the computer voice. To make sure it heard you. We're like, yes, that's correct. And then it goes, what features would you like to enable for this phone? And then it stops talking. Does not give you, like, music, phone calls, nuclear codes. What, like, I think we... And then it finally goes into like, okay, you can pair your phone now. And so then we open up the Bluetooth thing, and it's not showing up.
Mm-hmm.
It's not showing up when mm-hmm. you open the Bluetooth thing. It's so we're like, okay, we'll turn the Bluetooth on our phone off and back on. Okay. And we kind of just like, okay, what do we do? I don't want to go through that process again, really. But I suppose we could. Right as we're about to like start over, make sure we did everything right.
Uh-huh.
Then it shows up on the available devices, and then we type in the PIN and whatever. But it was just so odd. I've never experienced something like that. And beyond that, I don't like all of the decisions they made about like when music should be played and what the volume should be at like the radio, the actual radio, the
right.
like FM setting is so much louder than the phone audio.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're in the car mm-hmm. and you switch over to the phone, you start playing music or a podcast or whatever, and then you turn off the car, the audio stops because the car is off.
Mm-hmm.
You turn on the car.
Mm-hmm.
The default is FM, and it's as loud as it was when you turned off the car.
Oh God!
And it just blasts it right out the gate, and it was like, it was awful. And I am going to be so now. Like, I have to make this part of my getting out of the car routine is uh-huh. turning the volume down.
Right.
Which is ridiculous.
Right.
Also, it kind of refuses to take suggestions from the phone about whether the audio should be playing. And what I mean by that is if you push the pause button on my phone instead of on the radio,
uh-huh.
it stops for like 2 seconds and then the radio turns it back on.
Why?
I don't know.
Why?
And then...
That's got to be a bug fix. That's got to be somebody was like, oh, when you like go into a phone call and then the phone call ends.
Yeah.
And then the audio doesn't resume playing. So we need to make it just double check every couple seconds that the audio is playing if it's supposed to be playing.
Yeah, that seems like exactly what it is. Also, like, this is just kind of a minor... There are buttons on the steering wheel that control mm-hmm. the audio. Like, there's the next track and Becca track and volume and what source it's going to be playing from. The FM, the AM, the aux, the Bluetooth. But there's no play-pause button on the steering wheel.
Hmm.
Because it's made for radio.
Right.
Which is like, I get it, but it's still bad.
Yeah.
It might have made sense in 2011, I suppose.
So I think that is what is so frightful about the term Bluetooth capabilities, is that it's not Bluetooth integration. It's not Bluetooth intentionality. It's yeah. It's a layer cake where we took the radio and we stuck Bluetooth on top of it.
Yeah. And... someone was like, talking to your car is the future, and Bluetooth is the future, therefore.
I would wager a bet that it's a regulatory thing, that there was some, because like modern cars that I have seen, you can't touch the phone settings in the car while the car is in drive.
Right. But the car wasn't in drive. The car the engine wasn't started.
But I wonder if they said, okay, well, you're not allowed to do this setting unless it's through voice, because we're allowed to put as many things through voice as we want, because then we're not taking the driver's eyes off the road.
I can't remember if it was a Cortex or a Hello Internet, but I remember Gray talking about, CGP Gray talking about, like, what it actually means, what is actually distracting drivers when a phone call is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And his conclusion, I don't remember if it was supported by any actual data, was mm-hmm. that, and I agree with this, was that it's not holding your phone up to your face that is the distraction. It's the talking on the phone that is the distraction.
Right, yeah.
So it doesn't matter if, like, something is hands-free or not. And and the distracting part of it, like, as opposed to, like, a podcast, is that the person on the other end doesn't know what's happening in the car mm-hmm. and can't, like, adjust whether they're going to be saying something based on if something stressful or, like, worthy of caution is happening.
Mm-hmm.
Which is something that someone, like, just having a conversation, two people in a car having a conversation can do.
Right.
And also with a podcast, if you are not listening to the podcast, you know, you can tune them out while you're doing the thing that is stressful.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really hard to do that if you're actually supposed to be talking back to the person.
Right.
So, which is to say that that is a stupid thing that they did for stupid reasons.
Well, especially stupid reasons, because once you tell it the PIN that you want, you still need to punch in the PIN.
Yeah.
On your phone. It's just that they are no longer, the device in the car is no longer
responsible
for you taking your eyes off of the road, and so the whatever Federal Highway Administration permits it.
Yeah. Anyway, it was a really frustrating experience, and especially because we acquired this car because someone else got a new car. And it was mm-hmm. kind of like a hand-me-down sort of situation. But they got mm-hmm. the same car, but newer.
Ooh.
So, and then they asked us to do basically the same thing that we did with our phones to their, with their phone to their new car.
Mm-hmm.
And it was exactly what it should have been, which is push button, go into pairing mode, click the button on the phone, paired.
Right.
There's even, like, a handy little priority system that says, like, this is the phone. If, like, two phones get into the car at the same time, this is the phone that should be connected to the Bluetooth.
Ooh, smart.
Yeah.
Hey, did you... I'm guessing, then, that this car never had any other phones in the list? Because I'm very interested to hear what happens if you, say, list all phones. If you hear everyone's name saying the name of their phone back to the car.
That is likely what happens. We didn't try it, but I can say with some certainty that no other phones were ever connected to this car.
Sad. You're not doing podcasts, are you? As an entertainment medium?
Not entirely true. It's a fair assumption. Producer Quinn and I, on long drives, listen to one of her favorite podcasts. And probably, you know what, I don't need to use the weasel word there. Her favorite podcast, which is Hey Riddle Mouth. I really need you to work with me. Hey Riddle Riddle. It's a comedy podcast. It's hilarious. It's ostensibly a riddle podcast. It's
mm-hmm.
So yeah, either Hey Riddle Riddle or the Hey Riddle Riddle Patreon. It's very good. I highly recommend it.
All right. I'm off podcasts right now. But I'll keep that in mind if I ever go back on. And also, this is totally not worth going through the entire backlog. But I am pretty sure you just described the exact same bad system that Marco Arment was yelling about a month or two ago on ATP, because he just got a hand-me-down Jeep. And he needed to tell it the name of his phone, and then it said Marco's iPhone in his voice, and he was like,
And it's really upsetting because it's like, it's not like a good microphone or anything. It's like, you say the words and it's like a demon version of you speaks them back at you. Staticky, and the EQ is all off, Zach.
I would bet. If you get closer to the microphone, it'll give a more resonant... you got to figure out where the microphone is to do that. But if you do that, you can give it a more resonant performance.
I'll just keep deleting and adding my phone, but like positioning myself in different parts of the car. See if I can like triangulate where the microphone actually is.
Are there sounds that get quieter with distance faster than other sounds?
Yes. Well, sort of. Higher pitched sounds become lower pitched as they travel.
Oh, you could Doppler effect to figure out where the microphone is.
Yeah. So, so they don't actually get quieter necessarily, but lower tones will drop below human hearing faster than you could, higher tones.
I think with like the right algorithms could triangulate where the microphone was in three passes.
Yeah. That'd have to be very sensitive.
Right.
If it was like, or maybe I could just like, if you had a very precise noise making device and you could get like far enough away from the microphone to like actually have any significant Doppler effect. it's interesting. That was one thing I was trying to do at some point, was part of my like dream home sorta fantasy is like, I talk to my house and it starts doing things, which like, but like also with some consideration for my privacy. So like, obviously it would have to be completely like, I wrote it. I know there's nothing bad in it and there's no cameras. Like the worst would be like someone hacks the microphone and gets some embarrassing conversations maybe. But one of the things I was trying to do, like, I was like, okay, here's a 10-step plan for achieving this in my apartment. And one of the first steps was, like, create a program of some sort that can triangulate your position roughly in the apartment based on, like, how loud you are in three microphones, say. Which is when the idea is to be like, if I say turn on the lights and I'm standing in the living room, it turns on the lights in the living room, but not anywhere else. So,
but I bet the little Siri balls do that.
Yeah. But I was like, could I write something that does that? But maybe and I couldn't do it for a variety of reasons, mostly to do with not really understanding how audio libraries work. Maybe I was on the wrong track with using like the decibel level of the noises I was making. Maybe it's all about the Doppler baby.
You could calibrate it with a Kinect, like not have the camera set up always, but just have like one of those PlayStation Move trackers. So you've just got a little glowing ball that emits noise that moves through the room, and you say, well, okay, I'm at this position.
Zach, I already know where I am. I don't need to like collect data about where I am. I need, like...
Well, but I'm saying that then you can have a lot more data points. You can move this noise-emitting glowing ball through the room.
My neighbors are going to be like, what's happening up there? What is going on? There's these high-pitched squeaks.
Regular yeah, intervals. Just a squeaky toy.
Yeah.
But then the PlayStation Move would be able to give you the three-dimensional data about the room.
I already have the three-dimensional data about the room. I have it in my actual brain, and I can type it into a computer. I don't need the Kinect. I have that data.
What input system are you playing? Or is it just like, I am in living room right now?
Like, here are some tolerances. I'm going to make a bunch of noises in the living room and create, like, a tolerance window of living room. Or, like, probability that I'm in the living room is this based on this decibel level in this microphone and this decibel level in this microphone.
That sounds something that, like, a two-layer deep AI could do, like a neural net.
Yes. I agree that that is something that that could do. But also, I could do that with my own brain. And it could just be, like, I could use the model that I made with my brain. I'm the neural net.
You're saying you do the back prop?
I can look at the data and be like, this was living room, this was not living room, and all the living room stuff falls between these tolerances in okay. this microphone and these tolerances in this microphone. I'm making it, I'm trying to be as low-tech as possible so that it could conceivably get done one day.
Fair.
But my first hurdle is audio libraries.
Mm-hmm. The thing that used to be Almond is something else now, so you gotta keep that in mind.
I didn't know about Almond in the first place.
Almond. Fun fact, you can't just Google the word Almond. Almond is now Genie. But before it was Genie, it was Almond. Am I gonna get like a... It was a Stanford project to make a private... virtual assistant, privacy preserving virtual assistant. So presumably it runs on your own thing and recognizes the words, and then you can download somebody else's script that's like, you say, give me the temperature, and it tells you the temperature. Or you write your own scripts.
I was hoping for a more ground up approach than that, but like, that's definitely a valid solution to the problem.
Well, it still doesn't know like what room you're in. You still would need to give it that data.
That feels like something I could script in, though, perhaps. Or maybe I just grab their natural language recognition library and use that.
Yeah. It's probably all open source.
Probably.
And that means you can reuse it easily. That's what open source is.
Did I tell you what is my current Ethernet situation?
No.
So obviously I have the 2016 MacBook Pro, which has four USB-C ports. And I have a USB-C to USB-A adapter, and I have a USB to Ethernet adapter. And I have an Ethernet cord that is long enough to plug into the router. Would you like to take a wild stab at why I'm not using it?
The router is full.
Nope. That is not the case. It's drivers.
Oh.
The USB to Ethernet needs a driver, but they didn't write it with driver kit. They just wrote like a kernel extension. And Apple refuses to let me use it, and the manufacturer has not released a driver kit update. So the US, so when I updated to Catalina, maybe whenever they added the
locks it down more.
Yeah, whenever they added, whenever they like really locked down kernel extensions, and added driver kit to the standard library, my Ethernet adapter stopped working, and I have not bought a new one that like kind of just hopefully works, because they're like, if you buy something like that on Amazon, they just lie.
Yeah. You could get that Belkin one for like $40.
I might do that at some point, but $40 is $40 right now.
Yep. That the $40 was not meant to be a flippant $40. That was a,
yeah.
$40 is a lot of money to plug an Ethernet cable into your computer.
It is. It should just work. It should just work, Zach. It's supposed to just work, but it doesn't just work.
Yeah. It just, Wi-Fi is so good. If you buy an AirPort, it's this whole ecosystem of Apple-created products that really helps your whole life feel cohesive. If you can't afford an AirPort, an AirField will do. And now, a PSA from the worrying bugs. You don't want to know why JavaScript is trending on Twitter.
I do want to know.
Well, it looks like somebody tweeted how to disable right-clicking on your website again.
Classic. Jared, if you want to tell me how I can make my car not blast the radio whenever I turn it on.
Or if you want to applaud this podcast, you can reach out and tell me about it on Twitter. I'm at...